ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 2, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Do you have, you must have the Bhagavatam there? I've been, over the last 2 years or 3 years, in Lika, I was speaking on the first Canto, Chapter 1, Text 1. And having finished that this time, I've now moved into verse 2. And yeah, okay, so it's like this lecture I'm going to give is part of a series, but anyway, you can tune in at any point. So here's the verse. Who knows this verse, second verse of Bhagavatam? Has anyone committed this to memory? Anyone? The Duttas. The two Duttas. Anyone else? Jagannath Mishra? Alright, not many. So I'll just chant it and I won't wait for repetition. Dharmaf projita kaitavotra paramo nirmatsaranang satam. Vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam tapatrayonmulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni krite king vaparair ishvara sadyo hridyavarudhyatre trakritibhi susrushubhis takshanat. Do you have the book there? You got it? Okay. So I'll read out the translation in English, and you can read it in your language. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God-realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. So, as I was saying, this is a continuing discussion, because the last discussion of this was just a short time ago in Kalavach. So it's a continuing discussion of the nature of the cheating religion or cheating dharma, which is completely rejected herein. So here the word dharma, it indicates dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. These are the chaturvarga, or the four principles of life within Vedic society, or sometimes referred to as trivarga. The moksha bit is not considered, only religion. Religion meaning here, dharma actually, means a whole approach to life. Religiously lived life. Dharma, artha, and kama. Srila Prabhupada explains here in the purport that the idea is that if one lives a dharmic life, that means in harmony with the subtle laws of the universe, he is good, does not perform sinful activities, or even if he performs sinful activities, makes atonement for that. This is all within the scope of dharma, and this is all discussed within Srimad Bhagavatam. So if one lives a dharmic life, then naturally, and naturally here means nature, it means nature, means dharma means to act according to the laws of nature. So dharma rakshati rakshataha, those who protect dharma are protected by dharma. So if one follows the laws of the universe as given in Shastra, then he will be rewarded with wealth, health, and peace of mind, and everything else desirable within this world. That is the promise, but it's all cheating, because in this world there's simply suffering. But the cheating is to suggest that you can live better by following dharma, which is true on one platform. It's not fully cheating, because it's cheating for a higher cause. The whole Vedic system is a system of cheating people. How about that? Write it down. The whole Vedic system is a system of cheating people for a higher cause. Cheating. Cheating them to bring them to their actual consciousness. Just like a mother may cheat her child. Who would imagine that a mother could cheat her child? But it's often done. When the child has to take some bitter medicine, then the mother offers a sweet, or puts on a spoon, here's some nice sweet jam. So there is sweet jam on the spoon, but that's at the front of the spoon, and at the rest of the spoon has the bitter medicine which the child is vigorously resisting taking. So the mother smiles and says, "Open your mouth. Here's some nice sweet jam." And in it goes, and immediately the mouth closes and takes it in. But with the jam is the bitter medicine, which is actually required to be taken for the child's sick condition. So in the similar way, the Vedic process is one of cheating for a higher cause. You follow dharma and you will get artha. You will be prosperous. And then you can enjoy sense gratification. And what else could be desirable but that? That's obviously the goal of life, is it not? No, because when we come to Atato Brahma Jignasa, well, we come to that platform when we see that dharma, artha, and karma, they simply result in repeated birth and death. So Atato Brahma Jignasa. Atato. Therefore now, we should inquire into the truth or the spiritual nature. So this is sometimes translated as now in the human form of life, and sometimes it's translated now that we're fed up with material life. Now that we've followed all the dharmic rules for sense gratification, dharma, artha, and karma, now we're fed up with all of that. And we're ready to inquire into something higher. So that means the transition from what is technically called the Purva Mimamsa, or the Karma Kanda, to the Uttar Mimamsa, or the Jnana Kanda. So in the Jnana Kanda, there is Brahma Jignasa, which is generally the inquiry into the highest truth, or spiritual nature, which is usually understood to mean moksha. When you're fed up with, you've had dharma, artha, karma in 8,400,000 of species of life, and you're fed up with it, and getting a little bit intelligent at last after being cheated lots of times. So let's get out of here. And then we come to the Upanishads and Gyanakanda, and moksha, look for moksha. But that's also a form of cheating, because the idea of moksha without surrender to Krishna is actually, according to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he describes in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the worst form of cheating. Tarma de mokavancha kaita pradhan jaha hoite Krishna bhakti hoi antardhan. He says that this dharma, artha, kama and moksha, the attractions for them are all cheating, but among them the worst form of cheating is the desire for moksha, because that kills the propensity for bhakti. This idea of being merged in the impersonal Brahman, it is a negation of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. Therefore, all of these are prajhita. We've often heard, those who listen to Srila Prabhupada's lectures will have often heard Srila Prabhupada explain prashabdena prakrishta rupena. He says that, Srila Prabhupada often quotes that this prefix pra means it's an intensifier. It means to the complete degree. So, prajhita, completely rejected. Completely rejected. If it's just ujhita, it means rejected. But completely rejected. Here in Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no discussion of cheating religion, nor of cheating economic development, nor of cheating sense gratification, and especially not of cheating liberation. They're all completely rejected from Srimad Bhagavatam. Atra, herein, here. This word atra appears 3 times in this verse. Dharma projita kaitava tra. Paramonirmats, Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu Shivadang Tapatrayon Mulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite King Vaparai Ishvara Sadhyo Hridyava Rudyate Tra Kritibi Susrushipis Takshanat. So this word Atra, here, this comes 3 times in this verse. Here, here, here. Here's something esoteric for those who like esoteric things. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in explaining this verse, said that he explained what is the meaning of these 3 atras. Now, those of you who have been fortunate to visit Sri Mayapur Dham may have seen that as one proceeds from the yoga pit toward, if one goes up the road, further up from the yoga pit, away from ISKCON, that means there will be north direction, I guess, then one comes to another temple shortly after that, which is the Srivasangan. And then some little distance further up is Chaitanya Math. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said the first atra here is at the yog pit, the place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. The next is at Srivasangan. And the third one is at Sri Chaitanya Math. So the yog pit is considered equivalent to Mathura, the birthplace of Krishna, or the apparent birthplace of Krishna. Srivasangan is the Rasasthali, the place of, it's equivalent to the place where Krishna was dancing with the gopis. Actually, there are several rasa stalis, but the best is known as in the Seva Kunj in Vrindavan. So just as Krishna was dancing with his devotees in Vrindavan, so he danced with his devotees at Sriva Sangan. And then Sri Chaitanya Mat, that is the equivalent to Vrindavan. Well, one side is Vrindavan and the other side is Govardhan. And Radha Kund is there. So this is all esoteric stuff. So back to cheating religion, which is more of the kind of stuff which we are concerned with here at this level. That is completely rejected herein, in this Srimad Bhagavatam. So then one may say, well, there appears to be something like that within Srimad Bhagavatam, just like sometimes you read, is it at the end of the Dhruv Maharaj story? At the end of certain narrations within the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's stated that if a Brahmana reads this or recites this, hears it, he'll become learned in the Vedas. If a Kshatriya hears it, he'll become a powerful ruler. If a Vaishya hears this, he'll become wealthy and have many cows. And if a Shudra hears this, I can't remember what it is, he won't get beaten so many times. Something like, I can't remember. Maybe become a Vaishya in his next life. I can't remember exactly. So, what's the benediction for a Shudra? And we also find in Srimad Bhagavatam, at certain points there are long lists of kings and sometimes their wives' names and their sons, and it goes on and on like this. So you may say, well, what's that got to do with pure devotion? It seems to be the kind of dharma, or more relative to that kind of dharma, which is supposed to be rejected herein. So how is that, if it's completely rejected herein? Well, in the 12th canto of Bhagavatam, it's stated that such topics have been included, but they are not the essence of Bhagavatam. Such topics have been included to attract people toward the topics of renunciation of this world. So even herein there may be some topics which they describe some external matters. But that is not the essence. That is not the point of Bhagavatam. And stating herein that such topics are or the desire or the inclination for dharma, artha, kama and moksha, by stating that in the beginning, those who are intelligent hearers will understand that if they hear such things, that this in and of itself is not the purpose of the Bhagavatam. Of course, the dynasties that are described within the Bhagavatam, they're also not ordinary dynasties. They are descriptions of the vanshas, the dynasties, in which the Supreme Lord himself appears. We find a description of the appearance of Ramachandra in the dynasty of the sun, and Krishna in the dynasty of the moon. So, and within these dynasties, many, many great devotees appear. Many of the kings who appear are great devotees. And the descriptions of their activities are given at least summarily therein. And even we can understand that even those whose simply their names are given, they're also great persons. It's not that within a dynasty you'll get a great devotee and then you'll get five or six generations of, you know, just complete karmis, and then another great devotee will come, and then a few more generations of karmis. But no, there's the there was much continuity within the Vedic culture over hundreds and thousands of years. We can't imagine in the modern world where everything's changing all the time. There's no fixed culture, which is one reason why one of the many reasons why people go crazy or are crazy is that there's no fixed culture. People don't know who they are, what they are, even within the material world. They don't know what they're supposed to be. They've got all kinds of advertisements and movies giving them ideas of what they're supposed to be like. And, you know, at one time they recommend, you know, the fashion is to have your hair one way and dye it green, and then, you know, a few months later it's to no hair with a little squiggle which is dyed blue, and then the men are supposed to be all like Rambo, and the women are all supposed to be like some beautiful fashion model, and you just can't do it, you know. If you have a skinny body like me, then there's no, you know, you can go to the gym and do press-ups, you know, for 5 hours a day, but, you know, there's no way I'm going to get a Rambo in this body. And similarly, you know, women can go to the beauty parlor and spend, you know, 1,000 euros or whatever a day, but, you know, if you haven't got it, you haven't got it. And you can make a cover up and pretend you've got it, but it won't be very convincing. So, Vedic culture, the family traditions were very steady and fixed. That's why you find Arjuna in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita was very much concerned that the family traditions will not be, if everyone's killed, then how will the family traditions be maintained? The way, if all the men are killed, especially the kshatriyas who are supposed to be protecting everyone, then the women will be unprotected, and then if the women are unprotected, then they'll be exploited, and then the whole system of Kula Dharma Sanatan, the eternal family traditions. Sanatan here means going on over a long time. It's not Sanatan in the full sense of the term. So the family traditions will be spoiled and broken down. So the family tradition, they were maintained over many, many thousands of years. So that's why it's expected. If someone is born in a kshatriya, a boy born in a kshatriya family is expected to be a kshatriya. There are various reasons for that. That's because of the culture within the family, and also because of sanskars performed, which the garbhadhan sanskar attracts, and because of the nature of that family, a certain soul will be sent to that family, who is suitable for birth in that family. So because of this actually scientific system of following dharma, therefore brahmanas generally gave birth to brahmanas. Boys of brahminical disposition. That's why it was generally supposed that the son of a brahmana is a brahmana, son of a kshatriya is a kshatriya, son of a vaishya is a vaishya. It wasn't only because of some kind of prejudice, but because of the culture of Brahma Dharma, Kshatriya Dharma, Vaishya Dharma. It was carried on from generation to generation. And that's why, you see, in generation after generation, in a Kshatriya dynasty, there would be worthy Kshatriyas born. And not just born, but of course they have to be trained. But again, you can't train someone who doesn't have the basic nature to be a Kshatriya. These are, in the modern age, these kind of questions are the subject of debate in anthropology and psychology. Are people born with certain qualities, or In modern psychology, it seems that the consensus seems to be the idea that everyone is a product of their social conditioning. So the idea is that if anyone is put in a certain, from childhood, put in a certain social setting, that they will imbibe that fully. But the Vedic understanding is that the both things are there, that at birth one brings with one the consciousness of the previous life, and that will be reinforced if one is in a environment which is suitable for culturing that environment. But the sanskars or the impressions carried from a previous life is very strong. That's why we find, for instance, that even though Karna was placed in a family of Suta, which in this case means chariot drivers, he had his Kshatriya nature was irrepressible. He wasn't going to be a chariot driver. He had to be a Kshatriya. Now that may seem to be contradicted by modern experience, because it seems that, well, you know, the social environment is the main factor. This is, here's a bit of philosophical speculation, not mental speculation, that in Kali Yuga, people are not born with the Vedic sanskars. Therefore, kalo shudra sambhavaha. Everyone's born a shudra. So if you're placed in a different environment, it just means that you pick up a different kind of shudra culture to the one that you would have if you'd been in a different environment. Everyone's a shudra, so you may be a more educated or more apparently intelligent shudra, but everyone is by nature shochati iti shudra. Those who lament are the shudras. It means those who have no inclination to higher life or spiritual knowledge, they are shudras. So in this Srimad Bhagavatam, there is actually the only topic of discussion is the Satyam Param, the Supreme Truth. There is no other. It's not meant for anything else. There may be apparently some other topics therein which are touched upon. But clearly the emphasis is on Satyam Param, the Supreme Truth. Who is Krishna? And there is no Purana, there is no scripture like the Srimad Bhagavatam. There are descriptions of various leelas of Krishna in other Puranas also, in Vishnu Purana, and in other Brahma Vaivarta Purana, there are descriptions of Golok. So it's there in others, but only in this Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavat Purana, is the Krishna's true Bhagavan Swayam, the supremacy of Krishna, and especially elaborately Krishna's pastimes described in detail, and only here in Dharma Projita Kaitava, complete rejection of all religious activities which are materially motivated. The Srimad Bhagavatam is unique among the Puranas in its clear focus on describing the supremacy of Krishna and the supremacy of the process of शुद्ध भक्ति सबाई पुंग सांग परो धर्म यथो भक्ति अर्धोक्षजे अहितु की अप्रतिहता ययात्म सुप्रसिद्धति. It clearly herein in Srimad Bhagavatam is clearly defined that the supreme dharma for every living being is bhakti. And again, all this, all philosophical, everything is given in Bhagavatam. What is the meaning of bhakti is explained again in many verses in Bhagavatam. But to adhoksaja, this important term which distinguishes Bhagavan from anything material. He is beyond the material. And again, the Bhagavatam, it's a complete philosophical exposition of the Supreme Truth. It's just like this word, adhoksaja. What is the meaning of this adhoksaja? So that is described in many verses in Bhagavatam, how Krishna is transcendental. Etadishanam ishasya prakriti stho pitadgunai na yujyate sadarmasta yata buddhis sadashraya. There's, for instance, one verse that the Godhead of God, what makes him God? The Godness of God is that even though he appears within material nature, he's not affected by it. He's always transcendental to it. And that is true of his devotees also. Then we find also this, what is that? Namasye purushang tvadyam ishvarang prakrite param. Again and again it's stated that he is beyond material nature. So all these points are discussed again and again and again in Srimad Bhagavatam. And as will be described in the next verse, verse 3 of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is not only a philosophical discussion, but it also gives rasa. It is actually a book of rasa. And this should also be understood that the philosophical understanding and the tattva-jnana, the philosophical understanding, and the rasa-jnana, the knowledge of rasa, it's not different. It's not, they're completely interrelated and non-different from one another. Therefore, those so-called devotees who propose to only recite those parts of Bhagavatam which describe Krishna's pastimes, where they don't like to discuss the philosophical sections, they have not understood that Bhagavatam. They have no entry into it, actually. None of the acharyas will do that. They all discuss all the parts because Krishna, he is rasa, rasovaisaha. But he is Vedyam Vasava Matra Vastu. He is the subject of the Vedas. He is Jnana Gamyam. Within Bhagavad Gita, that person who is described as Vedeshu Durlabham, who is difficult to understand through the Vedas. But he is to be understood by Jnana. What is that Jnana? Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. The scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead as given in Srimad Bhagavatam. So herein is completely rejected, completely rejected. There's no room for anything, not even yoga or jnana, or this jnana here. There's no room for speculative knowledge or the idea that simply by cultivation of knowledge in and of itself one can understand Krishna. So Srimad Bhagavatam is a completely different presentation to that of all the others of Vyasadeva. It's the actual point. He's, up to this point, he's been presenting the Vedic knowledge in a manner suitable for conditioned souls. But or those who are on various levels, for karmis, gyanis and yogis, and for bhaktas in Vishnu Purana, that is meant for devotees, but he is not, until compiling this Bhagavatam, made a presentation which is meant for fully purified souls, the persons who can actually understand the Vedyam Vastavam, the actual subject of the Vedas. So this is a completely different kind. Tadvag visargo, janataga viplavo. This is a completely different kind of creation. This Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is meant for paramo nirmat saranam satam. This is not meant for persons who are on the path of dharma, artha, kama, or moksha. This is meant for persons who are the highest, Prabhupada translates here, paramaha, the highest, nirmat saranam, of the 100% pure in heart, satam, devotees, vidyam, it is understandable to them. So this is meant for such persons. Those who are near Matsura, this is the qualification to enter into Srimad Bhagavatam. No envy. So on the path of dharma, artha, kama and moksha, there is envy. That is the conditioned nature. There's envy of Krishna, which expands to envy of all other living beings. So the path of dharma is supposed to help one gradually become non-envious. I was talking about that midday, I think it was. How building roads, paths for travelers, and putting trees along them to shelter them from the sun. These are pious activities meant for the benefit of others. But ultimately, on the path of dharma, one performs activities. It's done. Activities are performed for the benefit of others, but it's done with the aim, ultimately, of benefiting oneself. So it's like trying to train people to become selfless by offering. You can fulfill your selfish goal by being selfless. So it's a kind of conundrum. It's like, you know, back to it's a contradiction like that. It's by being selfless, you can fulfill your selfish goal. But ultimately, the apparent selflessness is ultimately meant for a selfish purpose. And that will continue until one fully surrenders to Krishna, realizing that I am simply meant for His pleasure. So even the idea of moksha, with the idea, which we'll find in other Vaishnava sampradayas, is if we ask members of other Vaishnava sampradayas other than the Gaudiya sampradaya, that what is the ultimate goal? They'll say moksha. But they don't mean the impersonal idea of moksha, but the idea of going to Vaikuntha and serving the Lord there, which is the ultimate position for the jiva. But the idea, I will get moksha, that in itself there's a seed of personal desire. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us that birth after birth, mama janmani janmani shvare bhavatad bhaktyara haituki tvai. What is the meaning of a haituki bhakti? This term is used in Srimad Bhagavatam, yeah, I was saying. Ahaituki means without any without any personal desire. The only desire of the pure devotee is to satisfy Krishna. And the exemplar of that or the exemplars of that are the gopis. The story, I'm not sure of the source of it, but Srila Prabhupada also told it, which demonstrates the bhakti of the gopis, who, when told that Krishna's headache can be cured only by the dust of his lotus, of the dust of the lotus feet of his devotees, by placing that upon his head, they're immediately ready to give that dust. Even though doing so, they understood they should go to hell eternally, but they thought, if Krishna's headache is cured, what does it matter? So this attitude where there's no personal desire whatsoever, what will I get out of it? I will perform bhakti, then I'll get free from my material position, and I can be happy serving Krishna. So that's good. To think like that is good. It's a lot better than pretty much every other kind of thinking within the world. But still, there is the seed of some personal desire. Whereas, atra, here, is the vidyam vastavam, atra vastu. Herein is the subject which is understandable by persons who are completely free of any envy, any selfishness, who are completely selfless, who exist only to please Krishna and are prepared to accept all kinds of difficulties simply to please Krishna. Of course, Krishna does not want that his devotees will be unhappy. But we do find repeatedly in Srimad Bhagavatam devotees placed in very difficult situations. And in fact, most of the Bhagavatam we'll find how devotees are in difficult situations. Ultimately, the Lord delivers them. We find here in the first canto of Bhagavatam, Queen Kunti praying, give us difficulties, because when there are difficulties, then you're always with us to protect us, Krishna. But if there are no difficulties, then you can go off and leave us alone, and then we'd rather have difficulties than be with you. That's, who will pray like that? Who will teach us to pray like this? Dear God, please give us difficulties. No, it sounds absurd. And what on earth are you praying? Why will you pray to God? For trouble. Give me trouble. We may pray to God, remove my trouble and give my enemies trouble. But that's a common prayer, is it not? People will pray. That is, in the war, both sides are praying. Let us smash those people. Let us kill them. We'll find in the Vedas also, in the cheating religion, there are so many mantras and tantras for destroying one's enemy. But in pure devotion to Krishna, there is no personal consideration whatsoever. One actually loses oneself of I-ness, or thinking oneself the most important, by completely submitting oneself to the will of Krishna. So a devotee may pray, protect me, or a devotee may pray, give me difficulty, but the aim of the devotee is only that how by my activities Krishna may be satisfied. And then we could just stop that cut noise. So we find that in this Chaitanya Charitamrita, this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prayer in the mood of Radharani is described in more detail. This Ashlishava Padaratang Pinashtumam Marmahatam, even if I'm completely disappointed, if personally my distress, if by that Krishna is satisfied, then That is my highest happiness. And that's described how Radharani, she is prepared. If there is some gopi that Krishna wants to associate with, and that gopi doesn't want to associate with Krishna, then Radharani will go to that gopi and massage her feet and beg her, you please serve Krishna. Because she wants to, although she, for herself, she's very happy to be with Krishna, she doesn't want any other gopi to be with Krishna. But she only wants to see what is Krishna's happiness. So all this is implicit in these statements. These are general statements. Paramo nirmat saranam satam. This is understandable by the topmost devotees who are pure in heart. But the implications of that are described in more detail. That devotees will go through all kinds of difficulties for serving Krishna. They're tested, the apparent bhakti, that is not tested unless there are difficulties. It's easy, it's relatively easy to say, yes, yes, Krishna, we love you. But then in difficulty it is tested how one is serious to serve Krishna. So all this is described in Bhagavatam, and in Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada, in his presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam, first of all, in the introduction, gave a summary of the pastimes and teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srimad Bhagavatam is to be understood, can be fully understood through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who exemplified the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam. He is Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, in the role of a devotee, and while tasting bhakti ras, he is also showing to others what is the topmost perfectional path of entering into bhakti. So nirmat saranam, this non-envy, this is side by side, concomitant with dharma projita kaitava. As long as there is cheating religion, there must be envy, because the cheating religion means it is for the envious. It appeals to the envious. It's most supposed to gradually purify them, but as long as there is an admixture of envy, there cannot be love of Krishna. So, Srimad Bhagavatam propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by the fully pure devotees. It's understandable, enterable into, and therefore there cannot be any cheating religion herein. So those who propose to study Srimad Bhagavatam, this point is to be understood from the beginning. This is not a treatise giving you, offering you anything of this world, or any personal gain, the highest personal gain, which is to attain pure love of Krishna. But any selfish motive, anyone with any selfish motive, they have no entrance herein. So it's simultaneously a welcome to the devotees, please come, you're welcome here, this is for you. And it's also a warning to the non-devotees, this is not meant for you, there's nothing meant for you here. You won't hear, you won't get dharma, artha, kama or moksha. Nothing of interest to you. You go find something else. Don't poke your nose in here. It's not meant for you. But actually it is meant for you. It's meant for everyone, because everyone is meant to serve Krishna. But there is some qualification required also. One actually has to become purified. So Srimad Bhagavatam is understandable by the topmost pure devotees, and it is also for those who have some desire to attain to that stage, it will also prepare one for that stage. But one has to hear the message of Bhagavatam as it is, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Swarup Damodar Goswami, warned one poet who had come from Bengal, who had studied Bhagavatam and so many different scriptures, and had composed some beautiful sounding poetry in a drama. So he was knowledgeable. The poet was knowledgeable, but Swarup Damodar Goswami rejected his understanding, even though it sounded very devotional, and told that poet, Jao Bhagavata Paro Vaishnava Sthane. You go, you hear Bhagavatam from a Vaishnava. Those who are actually pure Vaishnavas, they can explain Bhagavatam. They can transmit the understanding of pure devotion. Otherwise, persons who approach Srimad Bhagavatam in an attitude of, from this we will get the benefits that we will get from dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Persons who have such desires, they will misconstrue the message of Bhagavatam. That is guaranteed. And therefore we find, for instance, the Bhagavata Saptaha, very popular in India even today, where people come, many thousands of people attend to hear flowery speakers, persons who can speak in a very attractive manner and explain the Bhagavatam, and it sounds like beautiful bhakti, how Krishna is dancing and nice songs of Krishna. And it seems very attractive, but that's the problem. Because it is attractive, and it's only designed to be attractive without any attempt at purifying the heart and preparing people to experience the actual bhakti ras, which is understandable by pure devotees who are completely non-envious. So people who desire some material enjoyment, or who even desire, I shall hear Bhagavatam and enjoy it, such persons cannot understand Bhagavatam. They will listen to it and they will enjoy it. But that enjoyment is on the platform of envy. It only gives some pious result. It doesn't give actual bhakti. There's no spirit of surrender there. In these Bhagavat Saptas, or week-long recitations of Bhagavatam, you will hear many nice stories about Krishna, maybe about other avatars also. But we won't hear verses such as, for instance, Yan maituna adigrihamedi sukham hi tucham, kandu yanena karayor eva dukha dukham, tripyanti neha bahudu, what is that? Tripyanti neha kripana bahuduka bhajam, kandu tivan manasijang vishaheta dhira. This, we won't hear this verse, for instance. And there are many such verses in Bhagavatam which describe that the happiness of attached householders begins with sex enjoyment, that's the center, and it is insignificant. That sex enjoyment is like an itch, which produces, it's like an itching rash, which produces more and more suffering. But persons who are foolish rascals, they cannot understand this. And therefore they go on scratching. It seems nice to them. That means going on engaging in sex. They have this feeling, some agitation. Oh, let me indulge. So scratch, scratch, scratch. And then they become more and more entangled in suffering. So there are many such verses in Srimad Bhagavatam. What is Rishabdev says, Nayang deho deha bhajang riloke kashtan kama narhate virdbhujamye. Then, tapod, what is that? What's the next line? Tapod divyam putraka yena sadvam shudyat yasmad brahma sokyam tvanantam. He warns his son, Rishabdev warns his son, that now you've got the human form of life, don't live like a stool-eating hog. He told them. First thing he told them. All his sons came to hear from him. Don't be pigs, he told them. Don't live like pigs. Now you've got the human form of life. You should engage in divine austerities, which are meant to lead to unlimited spiritual bliss. The Bhagavad Saptas, such verses will not be recited because they do not appeal to the cheating mentality of persons who come for some cheap enjoyment in the name of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Those who are actually non-envious, they must recite these verses. Those who are envious, who recite Srimad Bhagavatam and who want to cheat others, will not recite these verses. Because they simply, they themselves are on a platform of wanting to have cheap popularity, and they get it. And the persons who are listening, they want to have some cheap entertainment. They don't want the highest truth, which is propounded by those pure devotees who are fully pure in heart. They don't want that. They don't come for that. And if anyone speaks like that, they'll go away. Srila Prabhupada in Bombay, or was it? Yeah, in Bombay he was speaking like this. He was talking on these terms. And he saw empty, gradually emptying the whole hall. Again, in one place in America, I think it was, they hired a hall for Prabhupada to speak. And the hall wasn't lit. Only Prabhupada on the stage was lit. And it was this kind of hall where they have these pop-up seats. You know, when someone stands up, the seat goes pop like that. So Prabhupada says, well, you couldn't see anyone, but you kept on hearing pop, 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 pop. People were leaving. They don't like to hear. This is not for my sense gratification. No, not for sense gratification. This is for sense purification. Those who think that I'm already purified, I don't need to hear all this. I'm already a premi bhakta. I don't need to hear all this. This is not meant for them. This is meant for those who are completely pure in heart. Is there supposed to be a time limit for this lecture? No. Okay. All right. Well, we have another 3.5 lines to go. But I won't attempt to cover them all now. Paramo nirmatsaranam satam. Yeah, in the path of dharma is meant to make one gradually non-envious. Serving mentality is imbibed. One has to act for the benefit of others. So, one can only be paramanirmatsara, on the highest platform of non-envy, by coming to the platform of fully surrendering to Krishna. Until one comes to that platform, one's apparent selflessness will always be personally motivated. It may be that, it's just like we often see. Well, Bill Gates is an example. He's a rich man. Everyone knows that. So now he's become a philanthropist. We often find this in India. People, they become rich. They've got lots of money and they've got all facilities for sense gratification. And then they start building schools and hospitals with the idea of benefiting others. Up till now they've cheated others and exploited others and become rich. And now they want to have a reputation as a philanthropist. So they want to be known as a good person, doing good for others. Such persons cannot hear this philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam. You may think, well, they're very good people, but we find such persons, they're very difficult for them to hear this message because they're so much wrapped up in thoughts of myself. With my money, I've bought so much sense gratification, and now I'm going to buy reputation also. By opening a school or a hospital, I will buy myself some reputation. I will pose myself as a benefactor of the people. And they make foundations in their names for conducting research into all kinds of diseases that their factories have been contributing to making by their pollution. And one year they're making money with their factories, which are polluting and making all kinds of diseases. And then with the profits, they put the money into a trust for research into curing the various diseases. So there's so much hypocrisy. It's all hypocrisy. Enviousness means there's always hypocrisy. Those who are paramo-nirmatsara, they are actually well-wishers of others, but others, persons who are on the platform of envy, they cannot understand this. Because they define well-being in terms of the body, the mind, and the senses. And therefore they consider persons who speak the truth to be madmen or their enemies. They consider them to be aggressors. When actually the persons who have the actual benefit of others in mind speak the truth for the benefit of others. But people are so unfortunate that they cannot appreciate that. So they'll appreciate if someone is opening hospitals or going among the poor in Calcutta and opening homes, and people think, oh, what a great saint. But as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described, the ringing the bell in the temple of Lord Vishnu during arati, one time by a neophyte devotee, is far more beneficial spiritually and even materially than opening millions of hospitals and schools and so-called welfare institutions. Those who have studied Srimad Bhagavatam from Vaishnavas, they can understand this. Otherwise, this may sound to be some fantastic statement. And what is the benefit of ringing the bell, ding, 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 compared to opening a school or a hospital? But actually, these so-called welfare work activities, they place people into more illusion. It's a demonstration of one's envy in the name of philanthropy, because it places people more into the bodily concept of life. Anyway, I've discussed that in great detail on other occasions. So I'll finish here. And if there are any questions, please ask them now. Yeah, we have a question from Bhavada. Speak, give the mic and let him speak. Bhavada is going to raise €3 million to build a temple in Salem, right? He's going to do welfare activity for all living beings. I have requested him to do so.
Često čujem u razgovoru sa Bhaktom i tako neke komentare kako sve to što se opisuje u Srimad Bhagavatam i tako dalje, da je to bilo nešto u vedsko vreme, za to vedsko doba, i da je to teško primenjivo za nas.
Very often while speaking with devotees, I heard the statement that all those things and topics which are described in Srimad Bhagavatam are from Vedic age and that is not applicable today.
Everything in Srimad Bhagavatam is not applicable today. Very hard to apply today. Well, it's not only hard to, it's true, but it's not only hard to apply today, it's hard to apply in any age. Because in this material world, everyone has come here for to be envious of others. And pure devotees are rare. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, even at the cost of all my mutts and the whole institution, if I could make one pure devotee, I would consider my mission a success. He said that to even make one devotee, it takes gallons of blood. So it's true. It's not. It's difficult today, but it's difficult in every age. People in the modern age are attached to, what are they attached to? Lying on the beach, drinking, what is that, Karlovarsky beer or whatever it is. We just saw so many advertisements coming through Karlovarsky. It must be the most popular beer in Karlovarsky, I suppose. And sports, music, various forms of music, and anyway, whatever, people are attached to these things. And in the so-called Vedic age, people are attached to dharma, artha, karma, and a few are attached to moksha. It's all maya. It's a more sophisticated form of maya in the previous ages, and one that is supposed to help one become gradually purified. But unless one comes to the platform of Savai Pung Sang Paro Dharmo Yato, this, then it's all Shrama Evihi Kevalam. It's just a waste of time. Actually, in the present age, it is a better time than in the Vedic age, because at the present time, the flow of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is flowing. So although in many ways the conditions are more unfavorable, there is one very great favorable factor in the modern age, which is the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is coming with or through Srila Prabhupada and with Srimad Bhagavatam. And this Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for creating a revolution in the impious lives of a misdirected civilization. Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo. So actually it is a better time now. Not a worse time than ever. It's the best time. It's the best time in the whole of a one day of Brahma. So that argument is refuted. Any other nonsense ideas? You have a nonsense idea. Okay. What is it? It's all these ideas are actuated by envy. Persons who say that, well, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not relevant anymore. It was relevant up to 1977 and now it's 2008 and it's all become out of date. Such persons are envious of Srila Prabhupada and the Sankirtan mission and Vyasadeva and Krishna. Although they may have tilak on, mostly such so-called devotees don't wear tilak because they think it's out of date. So it's envious persons in the guise of Vaishnavas will make such statements. And just because they may have sat in a yajna and got an initiated name doesn't mean that they're a Vaishnava. If persons make such statements, they're envious. Yes, what do you want to say?
You spoke about how people are cheated in the Vedas for the gradual advancement you first offered by sense gratification.
Today
in Kali Yuga people don't believe in yagyas and this gradual way in the Vedas generally. So is it possible to buy reputation for ISKCON if devotee opens maybe hospital or school or teach people some simple things?
Is it possible that if ISKCON comes to the platform of cheating religion, that we can gradually bring them to the platform of non-cheating religion? Well, we can see if it's possible. There are attempts like that going on. There's always a danger, and that's what Narad Muni chastised Vyasadeva for. That, all right, you had a good intention, but you ended up just giving a pile of garbage in the name of the Vedas. Because you didn't, that's what he said, a pile of garbage. It's a pilgrimage place for crows. So you didn't give the actual truth. You were so much interested in bridge preaching that you forgot to give the actual essence, what it's all about. Because it's easier to bring people in. We say, dharma, artha, karma. We say, okay, great, let's go for it. So sense gratification sounds wonderful. All right, let's take it. And so if we offer that, then people may take it. But then if we don't bring them to the platform of understanding that this is all nonsense, and the only thing to do is to fully surrender to Krishna, then we've cheated people, and we've maybe cheated ourselves also, and we're in danger of, as Vyasadeva was, of just saying that, well, yes, actually, building schools are very good, and hospitals are very good, and building roads and planting trees are very good, and people like it. Yes, yes, very good. And it seems like, yes, we're becoming popular. But if the actual point is missed, then it's all a waste of time. So theoretically, one can do anything to bring others to Krishna consciousness, but the test will be if they're actually brought to Krishna consciousness. And simply to become officially a member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness doesn't mean that they've been brought to pure devotional service, if the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is more concerned with promoting sub-religious activities rather than the Krishna consciousness that Srila Prabhupada taught, which is pure devotional service. So everything has to be understood from the platform of Srimad Bhagavatam, not from the platform of our own mental concoction. Anything can be done, but if it's not guided by pure devotees, then it's almost certain to lapse into a lower region, lower area. That's why even the poet from Bengal, who was praising Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Jagannath based on the Shastric descriptions, was rejected as you have so many nonsense ideas. You should go and hear the Bhagavatam from a pure devotee. That is required. Otherwise, everything will be lost. Then we end up with ideas like the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is useless. It's no use anymore. We have to make some other program. This is Bhavada Prabhu has quoted. This the kind of nonsensical, rascal, envious statements which are common nowadays in what's supposed to be the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Sorry to say. Therefore, Bhagavatam should be spoken as it is, regularly, and heard as it is. And even though I know I've been giving this series of lectures on this, I know most people are not interested in this, and it's a good formula for making everyone go to sleep, because most devotees are not interested in much philosophy, but this is what Prabhupada spoke, and if this is not kept in the center, this understanding is not kept in the center, then some other lower understanding will come. Unless we come to the platform of understanding Krishna through Shastra given by the Acharyas, then we're going to get something else, and something else means envy and distortion. So we can do so many things, but the problem is if we're so busy doing other things, then we forget to do the real thing, the Vedyam Vastava Matravas, do the real thing, which in Bhagavatam itself we're recommended to do all the time. Smaratavya Satatang Vishnu, that's what we're actually meant for. And then we, instead of bringing others up to the platform of pure devotional service, we tend to go down to a lower platform ourselves and make things worse because we present this as the highest platform in the name of Krishna and Vyasadeva and the Acharyas. And it becomes more of a confusion. Becomes more. If we said we're just welfare workers, then we're welfare workers. But if we say we're pure transcendentalists following the parampara of the Brahma Madhva Gaurya Vaishnava Sampradaya, and our most important thing is feeding the poor. And this is the action, this is what people, everyone knows. This is the Hare Krishna movement. The Hare Krishna movement is meant for feeding poor people with vegetarian food. So it's good. Everyone likes it, and give them a government grant, and everyone's happy, and no one becomes Krishna conscious. So it's all a waste of time, because we're simply interested in distributing vegetarian food. And then we forget, there's not much point in offering it, because, that's not very important. And it doesn't matter if devotees are cooking or not, because it's vegetarian food. And that we find. There are many restaurants and food distribution programs of ISKCON I see in different parts of the world where there are non-devotees cooking or devotees who are not following principles, except maybe being vegetarian. Probably they're vegetarian. And what's the actual benefit? What, is this what Prabhupada came to give, a chain of vegetarian restaurants? Therefore, we have to study Srimad Bhagavatam. And while we're going out into various regions of esoteria, it's good to remain, or while others may do so, at least some of us may try to remain connected to the source, to the root. Yeah, anything else? Srimad Srila Prabhupada is not for presenting Bhagavad Saptaha. But under the banner of ISKCON there are many going on nowadays.
Cheap people in the sense like because there are attracts already in India, at least in the hearing Bhagavad Saptaha and present in pure van.
No, actually Prabhupada, even though in especially in the first canto, Srila Prabhupada writes several times against the Bhagavad Saptas, but he actually told one of his disciples, Jashamati Nandam Prabhu, who you know very well, to perform Bhagavad Saptas. No, he's not done it. Of course he gives many lectures, but he's not done that kind of Bhagavad Sapta. And obviously when Prabhupada asked him to do that, he didn't mean to do the same cheating style, but to use that format to present the actual Bhagavad philosophy. So Radha Govinda Maharaj of ISKCON and Lokanath Maharaj of ISKCON are two prominent ISKCON devotees who are performing Bhagavad Saptahas, and quite a few others are also. So it's all right as long as the proper spirit and philosophy is maintained. There's nothing wrong in it intrinsically, but it's the misuse of it and the idea that you just listen and then you go back to all your materialistic activities. If there's no change of heart, then what's the point? If the professional speakers, people come and listen. It's a pious event. I saw in Chennai once, they called me. There was, and the speaker, when he's just finished his speech, his 7 days, and then all the Marwari ladies came up with lots of umbrellas. There were all kinds of gifts, but particularly umbrellas, because it stated that you should give to the speaker of Bhagavatam an umbrella, which means the traditional style, not these fold-up ones. So they have a system where, you know, after he gets 120 or so umbrellas, you sell them back wholesale to the shop. Because what are you going to do with 120 umbrellas? Yeah, you sell them back to the shop. I saw that also once for some work of ISKCON. I was sent to meet Chandrasekhar Endran Saraswati, the Shankaracharya, at his mutt in Tirupati. So there were so many people coming and bringing coke. Everyone brought a coconut, and then this big pile of coconuts, and then the darshan's finished. They sell all the coconuts back to the coconut waller outside, and then again the next batch they come in and everyone offers a coconut. So Prabhupada wasn't interested in making a Bhagavat Sapta in which the be all and end all of it is umbrellas. But there should be Marwari, pious Marwari women give umbrellas and then they go back home and they go on being pious Marwaris with their TVs and their nonsense talk and their doing the pujas, worshipping all different demigods so their husbands can get success in business. Who is that telling me today? Someone told me that What was that? That someone was speaking. Some rich man in India. He had been coming to the temple for so long, and then he was told, "Why are you still worshipping all the demigods?" And he said, "Well, business is business." In business, anything goes. So, you know, we come to the temple, we like Krishna, we worship Krishna, but, you know, we need the demigods' blessings for the business. So they have faith in the Vedic principles, but on a lower level, they're still interested. Their interest is selfish. So Bhagavad Sapta that can lift people to a higher platform, that is required. That if by hearing that, one becomes Vasudeva Katharuchihi, he gains a taste for hearing the messages of Vasudeva on their own terms. And such Bhagavad Saptas are wanted. Now we see there was, I read in the infamous Back to Prabhupada magazine about how Lokanath Maharaj did a Bhagavad Sapta, and at the end so many people were buying sets of Bhagavatam. And the Back to Prabhupada editors were censuring Lokanath Maharaj for signing those books, the great crime of putting his signature in Prabhupada's books. But by his Bhagavad Saptaha, so many people were inspired to purchase Prabhupada's Bhagavatam. And if by signing them, they felt they were getting an extra blessing from the devotee, who's a follower of Srila Prabhupada, then sign, they should be signed. I cannot imagine that Prabhupada would be angry at his disciples selling sets of Bhagavatams and to enthuse others putting their signature there. Actually, Prabhupada's, he said that his disciples should be worshipped after his passing. There's actually a quote like that. So, envious people will see there's something wrong with selling Prabhupada's books. They're so envious of Prabhupada's followers that when they do what Prabhupada wanted them to do, which is to distribute the message of Bhagavatam as it is, verbally, and enthuse people to take sets of Prabhupada's books, that all they can do is find fault. So yes, Bhagavad Sutra is good if it's done by actual devotees. So, shall we finish there? Or is there any more questions? No? Alright, you have more? Yeah, please.
Seems like contradictory, because if Bhagavatam is just for the pure souls who are not envious, they are so rare. So actually,
pure souls are very rare, so is it not contradictory? Then it's for no one, hardly anyone. Well, I did touch on that in the lecture.
But there is also the statement in Bhagavatam says whether you are full of material desires or not.
Yeah, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Puram. Well, I did state in the lecture that it's also, the Bhagavatam is also suitable for persons who want to attain to that stage. I didn't elaborate on it, but like I say, this is a series of lectures, and I do intend to cover that point in more detail when I get into the next word, which is satam. But this is this is a series of lectures, and we can't cover everything all at once. But yes, that is true. This Bhagavatam, it's actually meant for every jiva. But it's especially though for those who are fully purified and for those who have some inclination to become fully purified. So that's true. Bhagavatam is a vast subject, so we can't cover everything all at once, and certain statements have to be understood in relationship with other statements also. Bhagavatam is a vast work. Yeah.
You have to understand that from
one side, Vedas are compared with, we are dealing with Vamarta Kama and Moksha, with the garbage. And from other side, we also understand that this is the arrangement for casual.
Yeah, how can we understand that the Vedas are on one side are compared to a pile of garbage, and on the other side they're meant for gradual purification? Well, I guess garbage can also be processed into something useful. Can be made into compost, from which good food can be grown. So that's true. By following the Vedic path, when one becomes fed up, then in the disappointment, one can come to a higher level. Therefore, we find in the Bhagavatam the statement, "Nairasha parama sukham." Disappointment is the highest happiness. Spoken by the prostitute Pingala and quoted by the gopis. But another question, which I thought you were going to ask, is that if it's compared to a pile of garbage, then what about the statement, "Vedesha sarve raham eva vedyaha, sarve veda yad padam amananti," that all the Vedas are meant for knowing him? Well, that's true. That's true, but one has to know the decryption. Actually, all the Vedas are meant for understanding Krishna. But some are directly so. And Lord Krishna himself refers to the, what is that? Pushpitam vacham pravadanti avipaschitaha. Persons who are not knowers of the truth, they are attracted to the flowery words of the Vedas. They're called Vedavadarata. They're attached to the words of the Vedas, but not attached to the essence of the Vedas. But from yet another perspective, actually, the Vedas only describe Krishna. What is that? This Vede Ramayana Chaiva Purane Bharate Tata Adavante Chamadhe Cha Hari Sarvatra Giyate. In all the Vedas, only Hari. All the Vedas, Ramayana, Puranas, Mahabharata, only Lord Hari is glorified. There's no other point. But in some places, the glorification is more direct. In other places, less direct. Otherwise, the whole creation.